On episode 475 of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we bring on Phoebe Lapine to talk about her book, SIBO Made Simple. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/475. Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness, the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go. Raz, how are you doing this week?
Good, Alan. How are you today?
Oh, doing pretty good. Outdoors, sitting on the patio at Lula's. My wife's bed breakfast, and I've been kind of sweating because it's been some warm couple days up here.
Nice.
Yeah, not so much in Michigan, huh?
No. Yeah, we've got frigid cold temperatures again, and we just got another 5 or 7 inches of snow last night, so we'll be digging ourselves out today, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that this particular one obviously is, I think, taking a big dip south because, you know, having grown up in the Southeast, most of my friends that I grew up with, they're dealing with snow and ice there, and they're not equipped for it. You know, what would be a normal Tuesday in Michigan is kind of devastating in Mississippi.
It is.
Yeah. So there's some struggles there. And I just say, if the weather outside is that bad, you know, if you can stay home, stay home, because you don't need to be on the roads. And particularly if you're just not comfortable or you don't have the equipment necessary to be on those roads, because most of the tires that you're going to have in the Southeast are not, they're not built for snow.
No.
They're built for rain and they're built for warm weather. And so you get them on the snow and they're ice skates.
Yeah. It's a dangerous situation. Even up here in Michigan, where we do have the equipment and the trucks and everybody's prepared, we all know usually how to drive in the winter. These frigid temperatures we're having, makes such that the salt does not work effectively. So even this morning, the trucks were able to clear all the snow off the highways, but they couldn't lay down the salt because it wouldn't have done anything. So we need to wait for the blue skies and the sun to come out, maybe get a little bit of melt before they can put the salt down. It's still a really tricky situation up here. So yeah, the best advice is to stay home if you can. Yeah.
The problem with the Southeast is that it's not that cold.
Mm-hmm.
So you get right in that kind of that scary middle space where you've got snow and then you've got sleet and then you've got ice and then you've got snow and
it's a disaster. It is just a disaster. Yep.
And the general reminder, bridges do ice before roads do. So, you know,
yes, that is true. Yeah.
All right. So I've been in charge of Lula's this week. My wife is in David doing some shopping for, the bathroom fixtures and sinks and stuff like that she's going to need to redo the 6 bathrooms up here. And then we're going to do an owner suite and a bathroom downstairs. And so, you know, there's a lot of construction that's going to be going on for the next several weeks. And she's in David trying to get that stuff together. And she put me in charge, and I'm not doing all that well. I forgot to feed our workers today.
About
lunch, you know, that's one of the things. You're in keto and, you know, you're intermittent fasting. You don't even think about food. I woke up, I wasn't thinking about food. I'm doing my thing. And I'm like, okay, well, I got to go get the microphone because I left that at the gym and I wanted to be back here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was walking back, I bought some groceries for dinner. And I'm like, I probably forgot lunchtime. I don't even know what time it is. And then of course, here I am for our recording. I was a few minutes late because again, I had no clue what time it was. I wasn't hungry. I'm not hungry. So unfortunately I didn't feed the workers today. And when my wife hears this, she's not gonna be happy with me, but I am gonna feed them tomorrow. I promise.
Oh, good. Good thing.
Yeah. All right. So are you ready to go have a conversation with Phoebe?
Yes, let's do this.
Our guest today is a food and health writer, gluten-free chef, speaker, and the voice behind the award-winning blog, Feed Me Phoebe. She is also the host of the SIBO Made Simple podcast and an author of the book by the same name. She's been featured in Food and Wine, Marie Claire, Self, Glamour, Cosmopolitan, and Mind Body Green. With no further ado, here's Phoebe Lapine. Phoebe, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I should say welcome back to 40 Plus Fitness because I had you on earlier back in 2017 when you had the book, The Wellness Project.
Yes.
And I have to admit, I stole a little bit from you. I liked the word wellness. I liked it a lot. I liked your approach. And then so when I wrote my book that I actually published at the end of 2018, I called it The Wellness Roadmap.
Amazing.
So it was kind of a lot. What you did was, okay, how did I get here? You know, how did I do these things to make myself well? Now, you did that in your book, The Wellness Project. And I think you stole project from
Gretchen Rubin. Yeah.
So you stole, then I got to steal. Yes, there we go. But we're all learning from each other. And I think that's the other thing is I was able to bring some things that you had learned on your journey and I had learned on my journey and say, okay, let's put those together because that's going to help people. And that's awesome. Why I do the podcast. That's why I have you on again. So we can talk about your book, SIBO Made Simple. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I started reading and I'm lucky. I'll just readily admit I'm really, really lucky in that I don't have bowel issues almost ever, almost never, ever. I live in Panama. My wife has already gotten a parasite here and had to take the medicine. touch wood, I'm knock wood, whatever you do. Nothing's like that's happened to me. So as I go into these topics, it's not something that I have personal experience with. Mm. So to me, SIBO and CIFO and Candida and, you know, all these things, a little bit like a Rubik's Cube.
Hmm. Yes, know? Definitely.
Because it's not a one symptom, one cure. It's multiple symptoms and maybe multiple issues all happening at the same time. So, you know, as you start adding the layers, and I didn't realize until just recently, they have a four-sided Rubik's Cube. I just bought one. It arrived today. So I'm gonna be having fun.
Four by four.
So you know, it's all they're all sided. But it the one we had back in the day was a three by three, and then I found out they have the 2x2s and they have 4x4. So I bought them just so I could play around with them. And that's, you know, as I got into your book, I'm like, you basically wrote the algorithm to help us solve SIBO.
It's a really good analogy. I'm going to have to steal that right back from you. Because as you said, I tried to create a roadmap as much as possible, but you know, it's not a linear journey. It's more like, you know, a really expansive map with lots of twists and turns and forks in the road. And I think it's important for you to be able to see the entire landscape because sometimes you have to, you know, go back to go and start over again.
And that's what I say. So you were in it. I mean, I think that was the thing of the book and the thing about your other book, the wellness, wellness project. Yeah. Is that you experienced this and you were down in the trenches. So this is not you just saying, hey, this is something that also affects people. No, you were in it. Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yeah. I always seem to write the book that I wish existed when I was going through something. As you mentioned, like I started to experience symptoms right after I had supposedly, you know, learned everything there was to know about gut health by doing research for my last book. And it was so funny because I really was confident. I was doing all the things that the microbiome specialists had told me to do. And I interviewed some incredible people and pretty much everyone's advice was the same. Like, you know, eat a lot of fermented foods and inulin rich vegetables and fiber and more fiber. So I was crushing legumes and, you know, drinking a lot of kombucha and kefir and whatnot. And, you know, I started to realize I was feeling miserable after every meal. So I went harder on all of those things and then felt more miserable. And, you know, eventually that got me back in the door of my doctor and the diagnosis I received was SIBO. Which is something I had heard of in passing, but didn't truly understand. And honestly, and like, this isn't just like making a silver lining out of a bad situation, but learning about SIBO was like such an aha moment, such an essential part two to my wellness project, my wellness story. And, you know, some of the other diets that I'd kind of heard of along the way, like the low FODMAP diet, began to make sense. So I'll just tell those of you who don't know the actual definition of SIBO. It stands for small intestine bacterial overgrowth. And it's thought that at least 60% of all IBS cases are actually being caused by SIBO. But it's not necessarily like a disease in and of itself, kind of similar to IBS. It's a sign that something has gone wrong in the body, that the mechanics of our digestive system has gone off the rails. And I find that part really fascinating because also in my research and kind of just in the wellness world, I feel like quote unquote gut health, like the word gut just gets thrown around a lot and we kind of forget that it's the entire digestive system. So when people are talking about, you know, good gut bacteria, I didn't really realize that it's not like, well, there's of course different types of bacteria in the entire digestive system, but the majority of it is supposed to be in the large intestine, not the gut as a whole. And the small intestine's really not supposed to have much bacteria at all because that's where you absorb your nutrients. So if there are bacteria present who, you know, have the same tastes as you do in large part, they're going to start competing for your nutrients. And when they eat your food, in particular, different types of carbohydrates, they release gas. And when that gas is super far up your digestive tract, it's not as close to an exit ramp. And so it's going to try and get out any way possible. Burping was a really strange symptom that I had that I kind of didn't even realize would have been associated with anything. But once I got diagnosed with SIBO and like read the list of symptoms, I was like, oh my God, the burping. Because again, that gas is just trying to get out. But for those who have IBS symptoms, the SIBO-y IBS is really high up. Like you feel that bloating like underneath your ribs. It's not like for the ladies out there, what you would feel like if you just were getting your period. And it's also something that happens very frequently. So pretty much so long as there's some sort of carb on your plate, and that includes vegetables, green vegetables as well, you're going to feel probably some sort of symptom because it's like the symptoms are directly related to the food. So it's a tricky nut to crack because you're trying to eradicate bacteria from one area without doing too much damage to the large intestine. And that's kind of the tricky walk you need to do with SIBO. And it's something that I know gives people a lot of confusion. But at the end of the day, I think it comes down to the fact that these bacteria are wreaking such havoc. They're causing so much inflammation because they're in the area of the gut that doesn't have a whole lot of protective, you know, it doesn't have a whole lot of protection. You have a really thick mucus lining in the large intestine, which separates your immune system from the bacteria. In the small intestine, since it's not designed for bacteria, you don't have that. So your immune system gets involved. Once that happens in the fog of war, you can damage the tight junctions of your intestines. That leads to leaky gut. And then that leads to food sensitivities. And there's a huge overlap with autoimmunity and SIBO for that reason. It's like kind of a chicken or the egg. And yeah, that, I think it's like one of the reasons, well, the gut is kind of at the heart of so many different conditions, but in particular with SIBO, there's just a very long list of things that could be at play.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the kind of aha moments of this is actually understanding that the digestive tract, each segment of it, I guess is the best way I can say it, you know, your mouth, your stomach, your small intestine, large intestine, each one of those has a particular purpose. And the large intestine is there, you know, to break down fiber and do its thing. But if you end up with the bacteria too far up, meaning it's into the small intestine, the small intestine isn't designed for that. And as a result, and you know, it kind of made sense because everybody was like, okay, leaky gut, you know, you end up with these gaps. You know, I'm kind of thinking, okay, how would that actually work? You know, it's kind of actually, you know, you think of it as a mesh, but that's fine. You think of there's a mucus layer and that's fine. But then when you actually said it, okay, you're getting gas and the gas is expanding something that wasn't designed to expand. It was just designed to pass this stuff through, pull out the nutrients it can because it's churning. So it's pulling out the nutrients as it goes over, I think it was 17 miles, 17 feet. So it goes across this distance. And during that time, it's pulling out all the nutrients. And there's a very specialized process. But yeah, if it's swelling up because there's excess gas in there, then I can kind of understand how it would force things out, you know, and of course the gas is trying to escape, but
yeah,
at the same time,
and it often just gets trapped.
Yeah, all the stuff in there is also getting forced to go somewhere. to some extent, because it's in that same space. It's trying to occupy that same space, which is getting more and more compressed. And you know, you feel like you're eating well, you feel like you're doing everything you're supposed to do, but you're getting sicker and sicker.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's another really difficult thing, and why I think learning about SIBO and having some sort of awareness is so important, because, you know, we're all like grabbing for straws, and there are definitely going to be certain experts or influencers or whatever you want to call it that people follow, and they just, you know, will reach towards whatever the piece of advice is. But we're all so different, and anything that can help can also hurt. And SIBO is a prime example of that. So the low FODMAP diet, which is something I had heard about kind of while I was doing research for my first book, is basically the opposite of what all the gut senseis were telling me to do. And at the time, I didn't understand. I'm like, why would this help people with IBS? And the low FODMAP diet is very data-backed for reducing IBS symptoms. And, you know, I kind of knew, you know, deep down that it had to be because their guts were so damaged in the first place that they couldn't even handle some of those quote unquote good gut foods, or perhaps they were missing bacterial species that helped to break them down. Could be all of the above and or SIBO. But SIBO really, you know, appealed to my common sense, because it makes perfect sense that bacteria, good or bad, you know, if they're eating their favorite foods, but they're in the wrong place, are going to cause you a lot of symptoms.
This episode of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is sponsored by UCAN. On the podcast, we often talk about low-carb and ketosis as a way of managing your metabolism, and how managing your blood sugar is key for weight loss and avoiding metabolic dysfunction. But how do we fuel a hard, long workout? I remember having a conversation with my trainer about low-carb, keto, and fast workouts. He was skeptical. I was getting stronger, but on my heavy days, especially when I was doing more than 6 reps per set, I would get winded and need longer rests than programmed. Had I known what UCAN Superstarch does then, I would have performed better and likely gotten even stronger. Most pre-workouts have sugar and stimulants that give you a big boost, but that is inevitably followed by a crash. UCAN's patented Superstarch is different. Superstarch has the remarkable ability to provide a steady release of energy without spiking blood sugar. UCAN energy powders and energy bars are delicious and provide all the energy I need to make it through an intense training session. I wouldn't touch a pre-workout, but UCAN Superstarch checks off all the boxes to give me the energy I need without the downsides. I'm also a fan of their electrolyte powder, UCAN Hydrate. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/UCAN and use the code 40PLUS to save 20% on your entire order. Make UCAN Superstarch your competitive advantage at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/UCAN. Now, one of the things, like I said, where you kind of added an extra row to my Rubik's Cube, was that a lot of people will go through, and, you know, IBS is somewhat, you know, it's irritable bowel syndrome, and it's somewhat of a nebulous thing that just means you have diarrhea, or you have constipation, or you have gas, or, you know, you just any kind of digestive problem. Then now you throw in some other things that often accompany this same issue, and, you know, diagnosing it, and then beyond diagnosing it, actually knowing how to treat it. Because like you said, we want to be able to remove what we need to remove without doing complete damage to the entire rest of our system. So you talked about topics like SIFO, which is more of a fungal thing, like candida. You talked about estrogen dominance and kind of some things about the thyroid that often come hand in hand, almost like you said amigos, but it's like I said, I would say co-villains, you know. You know, the criminal mastermind group that gets together to go against the super friends. Can you kind of talk about a few of those that would, you know, I guess for lack of a better word, are related issues that you'll find with SIBO?
Yeah. So SIFO, that one is easy. So that's just same acronym, but instead of bacteria, you've got fungus overgrowing, which candida falls into that category. And it's because the mechanics, again, when the mechanics go off the rails, you have a chance for anything to overgrow. So I can give you a little bit of an overview of what the main reasons why someone who gets SIBO might have as contributing factors. So kind of the first category is any sort of structural impediment. So a lot of people who have had any sort of abdominal surgery, even if it's laparoscopic, you kind of have this internal scar tissue that you may not know about that kind of restricts or changes the movement.
That includes a hysterectomy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, not to scare you, but if you have some sort of tumor, like that's going to change, you know, the structure of the abdomen. Endometriosis is a big one for women. It causes the endometrial lining to occur outside of the uterus, and that can mean a lot of growths that are bearing down on the intestines. It also can mean a lot of laparoscopic surgeries. So, you know, check both boxes there. The second big category has to do with something called the migrating motor complex. Again, something that I never heard of when I just did my basic gut research prior, but this is the street sweeper wave that moves food through your small intestine. So it's not like the same as peristalsis. It's kind of described as cleaning up the dishes after a meal. So it just helps literally to kind of like conveyor belt food through. And so when that breaks down, and it can for so many different reasons, then that's of course going to equate to an overgrowth very easily. The third category I would say is just various ways that bacteria aren't killed. So someone with an immune deficiency, someone with low stomach acid, someone without a gallbladder, anyone who's not producing enough enzymes or bile. That's of course, all those ingredients were designed by your body to neutralize unwanted bacteria, because bacteria is coming into our body through our nose and mouth every single day. It's just, you know, part of the way of life. So again, like included in those ingredients could be, you know, yeast or fungus, and our body is naturally going to have a certain level of bacteria, of fungus, but not in the small intestines per se, because, you know, we're meant to have a lot of bile and acid in there, and we're meant to have this street sweeper wave moving things through. So then the second category, I think, of the overlapping conditions that you mentioned would kind of fall under hormones. So hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's, which is what I wrote about in my last book, The Wellness Project, I didn't even realize really goes hand in hand with SIBO. And it's because, you know, you need a healthy gut in order to have your inactive thyroid hormone T4 converted into T3, which is the active thyroid hormone. But on the flip side, you need the T3 hormone in order to have a healthy gut. So it can become this real vicious cycle, as many things with SIBO can. So that's one. And then estrogen dominance, you mentioned, again, comes down to hormones. So our liver is such an important player in the digestive process. If your liver is not functioning up to snuff, you're going to not be, you know, carrying out your estrogen in the way you should, and then that could create estrogen dominance. You also could have estrogen dominance because of all the hormones in dairy products and the animals we eat and the personal care products we put on our body. There are just so many ways that that can happen. And then guess what? Estrogen dominance can also prevent you from converting your thyroid hormones properly. So all of these things, again, do feed into one another. And another funny one with, you know, the Hashimoto's SIBO and estrogen dominance connection is that, you know, if you're not pooping enough, which can happen, is a very common symptom of Hashimoto's, because if you don't have enough T3 in circulation, the migrating motor complex doesn't work as well. So again, you're going to have a motility issue. But then also you tend to not be able to absorb your B12 as much, which also leads to brain fog. So yeah, again, you're not pooping enough, then you're going to have estrogen dominance because you're not getting rid of your excess hormones. Oh gosh, it's a lot. It is.
And that's why I think this book is valuable, because if you're going through this, you have this as a reference. Now, one of the things you got into in the book that I thought was really important, because, you know, prior to this, again, I knew there was IBS. We've talked about the low FODMAP diet on the podcast before, but if you can segment this and start to understand exactly what's going on in your body, then you're going to have the right treatment protocol to get things done well, rather than just have to do a full on, let's just, you know, cut to everything out, do this huge elimination diet, and all of that, there you can basically refine how you're approaching things and deal with them the right way, is the testing. And so if you go through and say, okay, I'm going to do the testing, you can get some information about what might be going on. But even that is a little bit of a complexity.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the testing?
Sure. So I get people who write me and are saying, I got a stool test and it says I have SIBO. And I just have to politely say, you don't have SIBO. Like, there is no stool test that can tell you if you have SIBO. That's really just covering the large intestine. So the main testing for determining SIBO is a breath test, and it makes you feel a little bit like a mad scientist when you do it. So essentially, the trick is you have to kind of prep your system similar to an endoscopy or colonoscopy, not as intense, not as crazy, but by modifying your diet for 24 hours before, only doing white rice and lean meats, you're trying to make sure that there's nothing left in the canal that could cross-react. Then fasting for 24 hours, then the morning of, you drink a sugar solution. And there are a few different types that they use in these tests, but essentially you drink this sugar solution and then you breathe into a tube every 15 to 20 minutes, different tests of different intervals. And they measure the levels of gases in your breath. And if they find hydrogen or methane, and you know, they're essentially tracking it in those intervals to see how far the sugar solution has made it down your intestinal tract. Because once you reach the third hour and it in theory has reached the large intestine, you should see a spike in those gases. The only reason why you would be seeing these gases in your breath is because of bacteria eating your food. There's no other reason. So if you see within the first hour or two some sort of spike with hydrogen or methane, that could mean an overgrowth. And it is a little bit of the Wild West. Different labs and different countries all and different doctors all have different criteria for what levels constitute a SIBO diagnosis. But at the very least, like a lot of studies that have compiled all the data can see that, you know, a positive breath test does correlate to having someone experience some relief after treatment. So whether you want to call it SIBO or not, you know, there's something wrong in your digestive system. The treatments for SIBO seem to work. And, you know, one of the reasons why that is there are different treatments for different types of bugs that are overgrowing. So it's important to kind of see if you're hydrogen dominant or methane dominant, or a third type, which now they just introduced a test to test all three at once, which is hydrogen sulfide dominant. So it's a very complicated and imprecise science, but that's the best we got right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that is what we have, and you've put a lot of that in the book. So again, as a reference, I think anyone that's suffering from IBS or SIBO would want to kind of go through this. Now, we don't really have time on a podcast like this to go through all the treatment things that you should consider and all that. But you hit like really quickly in the book, the 10 treatment rules of thumb. Could you kind of just walk us through those real quick? Because I think this will give someone an idea of what's involved in actually going through a treatment protocol.
Yeah. I wish I could remember them. I should like open the book and have my cheat sheet in front of me. But essentially there are three buckets. There are different types of antimicrobials. One is a conventional antibiotic, and there are a few different types. And the kind of main one for hydrogen SIBO is not as harmful to the large intestines as some conventional ones. It's really designed specifically for SIBO and, you know, does a great job in just eradicating the SIBO and not affecting the balance in large intestines. Then there's some herbal options. So just natural combinations, compound formulas of herbal antimicrobials and some antifungals in there as well. And some doctors prefer just to use like singular herbs when targeting. Unfortunately, those have a little bit more of a wide, broad range, broad spectrum reach. So, you know, people who think, oh, I want to go the natural route, it's not necessarily better or worse. I personally went the natural route because I'm one of those people. I'm like, I want to do the natural thing. But, you know, they're not innocuous. They're really powerful plant medicine. So something to keep in mind. And then there's this one category called the elemental diet, which is not a diet at all. It is, in fact, a medical solution that is all of your nutrients boiled down to their most elemental form so that they absorb immediately upon reaching the small intestine. So they don't make it through far enough for your bacteria to ever feast on them. The treatment plan is to do it for 2 weeks, which is a long time to just be drinking your food. But, you know, it appeals to some people. Again, with like the varied options in your toolkit, you can really look at, you know, what are your lifestyle priorities? Do you want to get this thing done quickly? Do you want something that's the least expensive because budget's your main concern? Do you want to have a social life and not have to drink your nutrients every single day and actually go out to dinner with your friends? These are all things to keep in mind. But I think, you know, the most important part of treatment, and I'm sure this was in my commandments, which I wrote a long time ago, so I can't remember off the cuff, but you know, it really comes down to, you can get rid of the bacteria, you can do all these kill protocols, but that's only the first leg of the labyrinth because, again, it's SIBO's just a sign that there's something that's not right. So if it's your migrating motor complex, if it's that you have low stomach acid, if it's that, you know, you have some sort of structural issue, you kind of need to uncover those root causes if you don't want SIBO to recur, because that's why it's a chronic condition, is when people don't take the time to uncover those root causes. And some of them you cannot fix, but if you know about them, if you're able to like keep them in mind, there are lifestyle ways, you know, to try and, you know, protect yourself as much as possible.
Yeah. You know, sometimes minimizing the damage is the best we can do. Now, you mentioned something, and I think it's really important because most of us actually do want to have a life. And when things get back to normal, we're going to want to go on dates with our spouse, we're gonna, you know, meet a friend for lunch, something like that. You know, we're going to get back to doing that one of these days. And but now, okay, if I've got this stomach issue, you know, now I've got a fear, deep-seated fear that I really can't be out and public eating like that, or I really don't know how to approach it because I don't know what to eat at a restaurant. Can you talked about in the book, can you talk a little bit about how do I plan for and actually go out and eat?
Yeah. So first I'll put the whole concept of diet in the context of treatment and where it fits in. And it is kind of one of the questions I get asked the most because people are quite confused about it because, again, you know, low FODMAP, really data-backed for reducing IBS symptoms. Does it necessarily cure SIBO or help kill the bacteria? Most doctors say on its own, no. So there are plenty of people who, you know, will go through a SIBO treatment and won't make a single change to their diet and they end up fine. That's not most people because, again, there's usually a big overlap of other issues, especially autoimmune issues that happen with SIBO. So the low FODMAP diet is kind of twofold. A, you're trying to get rid of some of the things that are making your body most reactive, making the bacteria most reactive so that you can quiet your immune system and start to heal your gut. Then there's kind of the second camp of thinking, okay, well, I'm starving the bacteria by taking away their favorite foods. I think that's probably less true. And again, why it's not like a treatment in and of itself. So a lot of people will recommend you do the kill protocol, the quote unquote kill protocol first, and then layer on a low FODMAP diet to just help with symptoms. Some people say you can just do it and have it be imperfect. So making sure you're kind of like feeding the bacteria every now and then, like, you know, so that the antibiotics and antimicrobials actually work properly. You know, there's different thinking on it, period. But I will say a lot of people do end up layering in the diet because it makes them feel better. And it's, you know, the one thing that you have to control to feel better immediately, because that doesn't always happen with the medication. You know, they're hardcore medications, even the herbs, and you may sometimes feel worse when you first go on them because there's a lot of killing involved, and that comes with its own toxins and side effects. So a lot of people end up on these SIBO diets and they end up not having much of a social life because they can't eat out, because one of the biggest categories of ingredients to remove on a low FODMAP diet or a SIBO diet is garlic and onion, which is in, you know, 99% of everything you would eat.
Yeah.
At a restaurant. It's actually really easy, as you'll see in the book, to create gorgeous, delicious food at home without those things. But restaurants have not gotten that memo. There's, you know, usually some of it and everything. But yeah, I think it comes down to just mindset. And I know a lot of people with SIBO who just have such food fear because, you know, food is associated with symptoms. But, you know, my biggest piece of advice is if you stray from this diet, if you have symptoms, it's not going to necessarily make SIBO come back. It's not going to set you back beyond the cycle of your digestive system. So you may feel crappy for a day or two. But after that, you're going to be fine. It's not causing any permanent damage. So there is some leeway there for you to go out and have fun. And, you know, if there's a little bit of garlic in your food, like, you know, it might make you feel bloated and miserable, but like you have to just kind of let that go and accept that as the consequence and as a proper trade-off for having time with your friends and family. There is usually, you know, it's harder for vegetarians, I would say, to eat out, but there is usually, you know, a scenario at most restaurants, especially like French and Italian, which do have a lot of garlic and onion, but you can usually call ahead and there's usually a way to have like a piece of protein that's grilled or seared plain and a side of salad or, you know, wilted spinach. Like it, I think having done this for a while, if you explain your medical predicament in the off hours before you arrive, then there's usually something that can be done for you that doesn't have to be a spectacle at the table.
Yeah, that's pretty, having worked in the restaurant business, I can tell you, if you're calling at 6 o'clock for a 7 o'clock dinner, and they're busy. And so the little girl's going to answer at the phone at the front of the house. And she's going to go back there and say, you really want me to tell the chef this? And it's not going to make it to the chef.
No.
Whereas if you call at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, when she's basically cutting lemons and wrapping silverware, she'll be able to go back there. And the chef is at that point starting the prep and everything. And maybe you talk to the sous chef, maybe talk to the chef, but yeah, just saying, you know, I've got an issue with garlic and onions. Could I have a meal prepared without them? Or what would you recommend off your menu? Many cases, they might even have something on their menu that they can just recommend straight away. Or you can ask them to modify a few things, get your protein, get the vegetables in that are appropriate for you, and charge on. And this is with any way of eating, you know, you're the customer, you're the patron coming into that restaurant. So, take ownership, make the phone call, get the menu out and have the conversation with them and you should be able to figure it out.
Yeah. I have a friend who has lupus and really can't have any salt. Otherwise, you know, she'll potentially have kidney failure. And that's, again, very hard to do at a restaurant because a lot of the meats are seasoned and marinated. A lot of even vegetables that are blanched in a pot of salted water, you know, in advance, like it can be a real minefield. And she has a very cute laminated card with like a note from her mother that's like, it's just like, please don't kill me. And, you know, she just asks the wait staff to take it back into the kitchen. She has, you know, places by her who, you know, she knows the staff and the chef and they know what to do with her and can call in advance. But, you know, in last minute scenarios, she has them go back with the card and, you know, people always find something for her. It's maybe sad. It's not ideal, but like they always find a way. So yes, if you can appeal to someone's conscience or, you know, sense of wanting to feed you, that's great.
Well, that's why they get into that business. That's what they want. So you're just asking them to do it in a more responsible way for you. And that's good. Phoebe, I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
Oh, man. Oh, so many. So forgive me if I said some of these the last time round, because I'm so grateful that I did my wellness project before the SIBO experience, because it really did teach me a lot. And I already had a pretty robust toolkit in terms of the lifestyle stuff that helped me on my way with SIBO. But I would say, number one, set yourself up for success at home so you can find more freedom out in the world, assuming we'll all be more out in the world at some point. But, you know, maybe this past year has been a blessing in disguise for a lot of people setting themselves up in that way at home. So I think kind of one-time swaps for me, just like switching everything over to naturals in terms of cleaners, personal care products, et cetera, was huge. And I never have to think about it again. And like, you know, the three meals a day that I eat where I have to think about putting a filter on my tap, never have to think about getting, you know, chemicals out of my water again. I just know that those things are lowering my toxic burden every single day without me having to lend any sort of mind space to it. Then I would say number two, more specific to SIBO, is that how you eat is much more important than what you eat. I know the information circulating out there is always around what you're eating, but again, thinking about kind of the mechanics of your digestive system, how you eat it truly is much more important. So that migrating motor complex, it only kicks into gear during a fasting state of 90 minutes or more. So that means it doesn't matter what you're eating, but if you're snacking all the time, if you're grabbing for, you know, a couple almonds, even if it's not prepackaged, like, but certainly, you know, prepackaged this or that, it doesn't matter. Like you're stopping that function from kicking into gear, and that's going to prevent food from moving through your system in the way it was meant to. And then number three, I would just say, like, do not forget about the mind-gut connection and the power of mindset in general. I do think if we stress too much about what we're eating, it doesn't matter how much kale or what have you is on your plate, you're not going to be healthy. And you could be creating symptoms without even knowing it. I know that happens to a lot of SIBO people on, you know, the other side of treatment. And when they're starting to reintroduce, there's just so much fear around it that it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So for that reason, I'd say, like, if you have IBS, if you have a lot of gut issues, don't just look into all these protocols, but maybe also look into a modality that's not talked about as much, like hypnotherapy for IBS, just as effective as the low FODMAP diet for reducing symptoms. And I would say probably has more of a holistic impact on your overall condition.
Thank you, Phoebe. If someone wanted to learn more about you or about the book SIBO Made Simple, where would you like for me to send them?
You can send them to SIBOMadeSimple.com for everything about the book and to get some of the bonuses, which will still be available after launch. And for recipes, you can go to FeedMePhoebe.com. And really, just to keep up with my usual happenings, the best place to go is Instagram, which is just my name, at Phoebe Lapine.
Cool. So you can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/475, and I'll be sure to have the links there. Phoebe, thank you for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Raz.
Hey, Ellen. Wow. I don't know that SIBO is very simple. It sounds like a very complicated situation.
It is, you know, it's like I said, I compared it to a Rubik's Cube, and, you know, that's kind of one of those puzzles that I've never really ever wrapped my mind completely around. You know, there is an algorithm to it, you know, that they tell you, okay, you know, you get this side worked and then you can just start doing these things. And over time, you're going to end up with a solved puzzle. I'm not going to say that this is that simple, but Phoebe did do a pretty good job of putting together an algorithm for you, for lack of a better word, an approach, a program to kind of help you deal with this, because it isn't simple. It's just not a simple thing, and it's never necessarily even one thing. Sometimes you've got two or three things all coming in together, and what, you know, that complexity means that most of the time you go to your doctor and you're going to hear, oh, you have IBS.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to know what's causing the IBS? Not necessarily. So you have this syndrome that they really haven't defined what's wrong with you, and they'll try different things, but in many cases it's just going to make things worse. So Phoebe did do a really good job of making it as simple as it can be. So if you're dealing with this, I mean, just, you know, something I've never really had to deal with. I've got a steel tank for a stomach. I can pretty much eat anything.
Lucky you.
And I'm going to be fine. I think the only thing I've ever eaten that I probably had to stress with was durian fruit in Malaysia.
Oh.
And the problem I had was, okay, one, it smells horrible. Two, it doesn't taste that good. They like it and the Japanese like it. But, and then three, it made me extremely gassy, and I had it the day before I got on an airplane to fly back to the States. So yeah, 15 hours on an airplane after eating durian fruit, I was not a very popular person.
That's so awful.
Otherwise I can pretty much eat anything, and I do well, you know, I don't have a lot of stomach distress, but I recognize the the impact it has on people's lives. If, you know, you're having to wait for a movement in the morning before you feel comfortable and confident to leave the house, that's not a good scene. That's not how you want to live. And so, you know, making sure that you're doing the right lifestyle things to manage your health and manage your gut microbiome, because there are no real short, simple answers, you know?
Yeah. It's a good thing she wrote this book, because SIBO is such an unusual situation. And the thing with IBS is that it has a broad range of symptoms, and it's hard to sometimes put your finger on, and it's like you mentioned, it's hard to get diagnosed properly. So to have this kind of handbook to highlight some of the key points to watch for, or even the treatments to try, seems like a really beneficial thing for such a unique disease or problem.
Yeah. And to your point there, I mean, yeah, when constipation and diarrhea are both symptoms of the same thing.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It happens all the time, you know, it could be just something you ate, or it could be the signs of a bigger looming problem. And yeah, it's sometimes hard to figure out.
Yeah. But if it's something you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, you've got to actually put the time in and get that fixed, because that's pulling away from the quality of your life. And, you know, I say this at the end of every show, you know, what are the things that you would do to be healthy and fit and happy? Those are all in my wellness formula. You have to have all three. And if you're dealing with stomach distress, any other symptoms of SIBO, it's worth taking the time to work through some of these protocols and try to get that under control. And, you know, one of the cool things about the human body, and particularly our digestive tract, is it heals itself. So if you take the time to do those things, you might not ever have to deal with this again. Once you've solved the problem, like unlike a lot of other chronic illnesses, you have to keep treating it. You have to keep dealing with it. But SIBO is kind of one of those things that, you know, once you kind of get that bacteria out of your small intestine, once you get the fungi, because again, SIFO, once you get that stuff done and out of your system, if you're eating right and you're doing the right lifestyle things, it's probably not going to come back. And that's a very positive message to kind of take out of this is, you know, if irritable bowel syndrome is something that you deal with on a regular basis, there is a solution. And, you know, Phoebe's done a really good job of mapping that out, taking care of herself, you know. So this was something she personally went through. And then she's done the research, a lot of really good research at that, to put forward solutions for you.
That's really wonderful. It's nice to have that ray of sunshine, knowing that it's treatable and you may not ever have to deal with it once you know how to treat it and maybe watch the foods to avoid or the way of eating that you should avoid.
Yeah. So, you know, I finished up the pre-launch of my 12-week program, and man, I cannot tell you how proud I am of the 12 people that went through this program.
Yay.
They worked so hard. They're working so hard because they're still in it. You know, it's a 12-week program. Some of them started all the way back in early December, you know, the last days of December, even before New Year's Eve, you know, so they didn't wait for New Year's resolutions. They jumped on it. And then I've got others that have just come in recently. So they're just kind of getting started. But it's like having a family now. I mean, it's really, really cool to have people that are all going through a common mission. Try to get healthy and fit, to try to lose some weight. And they're doing it and it's not always a straight line. And then there's struggles just like any other thing that's worth having. But they're putting the work in, and it's just so rewarding to watch people succeed at something that they've struggled with. One of the clients in there, she said, you know, before we got on there, she says, can you even lose weight when you're over 50?
Oh, wow.
So she, you know, she had this limiting belief that you couldn't lose weight after the age of 50, particularly if you're a woman, that she was just destined to stay overweight.
Wow.
And so she's learning so much about her body and learning so much about how she can get healthy. And as a really cool side effect of being healthy, losing weight, you know, it's just really exciting to see that change in people. So I'm loving what I'm doing right now.
That is so exciting. What are some of the commonalities you're seeing? Are you seeing people moving more or making some really neat swaps with their diet? What are you seeing with your group of people?
It's a little bit of all of it, because, you know, as we look at making changes like this that are not just a a diet. So, mm-hmm. you know, you go in and say, okay, here, I'm going to go on a diet and then I'm going to do that till I lose the 5 pounds or the 15 pounds that we're trying to lose here. And then you mm-hmm. say, okay, well, I'll go back to eating what I ate before because I lost the weight. And guess what happens? The weight comes back and it comes That's back right. with a vengeance. And people are like, I don't understand. You know, I diet and then I gain it all back. Well, you didn't stay eating a way that was sustainable for your body. So what we're trying to do here is we're trying to look at, yeah, moving more, which, you know, mm-hmm. if you've got a trainer that's giving you workouts and holding you accountable, then you have the guidance, the support and the accountability that you need to remain active. So that's there. And then with the food and everything else, it's sort of like, okay, what's sustainable for me? You know, mm-hmm. what's the right thing for me? And mm-hmm. so I have 12 people. All of them are eating their own way. They're all unique in the what they're doing, the exercises they're doing, because they're building a sustainable lifestyle that works for them. So there are some commonalities. Yes. If you were used to eating a certain food and you're like, I really want pizza. this is just as a side. Okay. So pizza is one of those dangerous foods in general because it's high carb and high fat. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's just like, you're just telling your body that you don't like it. yes. I mean, it's delicious. Don't get me wrong. I love uh-huh. pizza too, but it's high fat and it's high carb. And so mm-hmm. it's way too many calories for the nutritional mm-hmm. value that you're getting from a pizza to be worth it. And so some people, it's just like, okay, they ordered a meat pizza and I scraped the topping off and didn't eat the bread. Is that a good thing? And I said, yes, better. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I shared a recipe for what they call the fathead pizza mm-hmm. crust, which is just basically cheese and almond flour, mm-hmm. for lack of better words. And basically you make a crust with that mm-hmm. and then you put your toppings on. So is it the healthiest thing or the best nutrition thing in the world? And the answer is no, but it's mm-hmm. not high fat, high carb anymore. It's right. just high fat. And what you'll find with the fathead type pizza is you just can't eat 6 slices of this stuff.
Gosh, no.
you're going to eat 1 or 2 slices and say, oh my goodness, I am full. And you're mm-hmm. 6 hours later, you're still going to be full. And, so that's one of the advantages of things like that. When you're looking at the, not just the calories in, calories out, because it is a thing, but I'm going to mm-hmm. talk about that in an upcoming podcast, but there's also the what you're eating and are you getting the nutrition you need? Mm-hmm. And there's the hormone piece. And so all of those are layers on something that's a very complex thing that everybody wants a simple rule. Tell me what to eat. Yeah. Tell me what to not eat. And it's mm-hmm. it's never really that simple, because if I told someone they could never have pizza again mm-hmm. every single day of their lives, they're going to be craving pizza because mm-hmm. I said they couldn't have it. Yep. And so I'm not saying you can't have it. I just understand what it is. Mm-hmm. Have a plan.
Yep.
And then manage to that. And and if you slip up, it's like, okay, you know, you went out with friends and you had a piece of pizza. You're not gonna die.
No.
You're not gonna die. But you know now you put the carbs in your system, you put the high fat in your system, and you know you feel a little bloated, you feel a little bad the next day because you did it. And if you did it for the right reasons, then that's great. But if you didn't, then lesson learned, you know, let's move on. So, there's not one common lesson. And I think that's why, you know, at times I've used cookie cutter stuff and it generally works for most people, but it's not, some of those things are just not sustainable mm-hmm. because they're cookie cutter.
Right.
And they're not designed for you. And so everything I'm doing with this program is completely custom. And so I'm talking to each and every person, like, what do you like to eat? What do you do? You know, so I've got a vegetarian in there. I've got, you know, other people that were like, you mean I get to eat meat? And I'm like, you get to eat meat. You should be eating meat if you like meat. You know, it's got tons of great nutrition in it. You know, you don't have to ignore or throw out an entire food group. And no, I don't consider carbs a food group. I consider vegetables a food group. I consider meat a food group.
Yep.
And so I'm not saying you can't have carbs. You can have some carbs, but you want to get it from sources that are actually food.
Yes.
And pizza dough is not actually food.
no nutrients in that. That's for sure.
And even, well, they might enrich the flour with B vitamin, the niacin, mm-hmm. But at best, that's it. It's enriched flour, but it's flour, and it's going to be blood sugar, and it's going to be insulin, and then it's going to be fat. And because you're eating the high fat on top of that, your calories are higher, and boom, it's like, okay, we got all this stuff. Let's just start storing it because I got nothing. I got nothing to do with this. And so it just stores it as fat. And so, you know, that's the unfortunate reality of things is, you know, you don't have to say no, but you might have to substitute, or if you're going to do it, at least understanding what it's going to mean in your overall approach to health and wellness.
That sounds awesome. Well, I'm really excited for all your people who get these customized training programs and tips and all this support from you. I'm really excited to see that success. That's wonderful.
But yeah, they're having, I'm having a ball. They don't always like me. I'm like, oh, but you know, at the same time, I'm saying, well, what are you missing? What are you, you know, what's not there that you want there?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the most part, they're not really missing much.
No, but it's a big habit change though. You know, when you're used to eating something or moving in a certain way, sometimes it's really hard to make those big changes. But it, you know, once they try it, you know, it leads to other things. You know, when you are starting to eat well, you can move better. And when you're starting to move better, you want to eat better. So it's like a snowball.
Yeah.
Once it gets rolling, it gets better. So that's exciting.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Anything else you want to go over, Rachel, before we call it a day?
No, today was a good one, but thank you.
Awesome. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness podcast, we discuss why simple can be a bad long-term strategy for weight loss. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.